Love a Dubcast. I'm Johnny. He's George. We had a Dubcast all ready to go. I had written out the script for the show, the progression of topics we would talk about. I had a bunch of links. Like, oh, let's do some sports. And, you know, there was a very serious news item that happened to Ohio State we're going to kind of lead with, and we still want to talk about that. But I just want to preface this entire Dubcast, this entire podcast, by saying this is one of the most ridiculous things on many levels that I think Ohio State has been a party to in a long time. And it's, I think, even...
I know, I can't believe Diebler hasn't gotten any three-point shooters in the transfer portal
yet. I know. That's right. That's what we're going to spend the next hour on. No, first of all, awful news out of commencement today as we record this on Sunday, May 5th. There was a person who unfortunately died during the commencement. Just an awful event. It doesn't seem like a lot of information was disseminated to people at commencement, even though there was seemed to be some awareness that it had happened. There's been no real additional information from either police or university officials as of, you know, the recording of this podcast, which is both unusual and probably, you know, out of respect for the person who died and their family, which is understandable. But this happened during commencement. And I think, you know, we're going to kind of have some, opinions and get into what was happening during commencement here in a few minutes. But the larger thing that I kind of want to emphasize as we talk about this is that in a lot of ways, today was kind of a failure in multiple levels of leadership and administration and oversight. And I think, you know, the horrible thing that happened at commencement is kind of, it's much more serious than anything else that we'll talk about. But it's also something that I think deserves way more attention and way more, investigation and research and all that kind of stuff than anything else that we'll go on to say. So I want to say that from the jump, and our thoughts and prayers are with the family of the deceased and everyone else who was affected by it, because it's just an awful, horrible thing, especially during, you know, what's supposed to be, you know, one of the greatest moments of, a student's life. So, like I said, our thoughts to everyone involved, and we hope that this isn't something that just gets, you know, swept under the rug and people stop talking about it, because that's a big deal. And I think Ohio State needs to really address it in earnest, because it's not something that should ever happen. And particularly during that moment like that.
Yeah. There was an interview that Travion Henderson did earlier this week, where he got kind of candid about the dark place that he went to regarding the mental impact that his injury a season or two ago and the recovery timeline associated with that had just on his well-being. And he very transparently said that he had had suicidal thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And, there was discussion coming out of that in the Ohio State community about, you know, the larger epidemic surrounding mental health that's going on at the moment. And I think that was unfortunately reflected by the events that happened at commencement today in another part of the student body. There was at least, I know you said there hasn't been a lot of information released as of the recording of this podcast Sunday night, May 5th. There was a witness at least that did say that they saw the person jumping, and it does seem like there wasn't a lot of information like made available to people that were at commencement, regardless of what the circumstances actually were, the fact that there were multiple witnesses or people that had to see something that tragic take place at what was supposed to be a celebration. But, you know, to your point, I'm not sure how preventable of a tragedy that is, but it is, you know, there were certainly other preventable shortcomings that happened at today's commencement that made the overall event
and so
a sincere failure by any standards, but especially those that we've come to expect for the Ohio State University. So I,
yeah, and this is kind of my point.
We offer our condolences, and it's, you know, we're going to get into a lot of the other stuff that happened, but it's important that we'd lead with that out of respect to the person that lost their life and their family as well.
100%. And this is kind of my general point with this is that, you know, college campuses and administrators and all that kind of stuff, there's a lot that they are dealing with right now, right? There's a lot of campus unrest. There are a lot of things around mental health and a lot of other, you know, like just general political and social things that you have to handle as part of a major college and university and as a campus and all those things. And, you know, you want to believe that the school that you went to, that this gigantic campus, this huge institution, you know, with tens of thousands of students and things like that, are able to handle those things in a way that's compassionate, makes sense, takes moral stands, you know, those kind of things. And I think the commencement speaker that they had, right? And this isn't like, I know it's a little snooty to say something like this, but this isn't like the fall, or this isn't like the fall commencement or the winter commencement or something like that. This is the main commencement where you have the bulk of the student body graduating. This is like the one where you expect to have everybody, you know, on board, ready to go. There's going to be lots of media. It's a huge, you know, part of the, you know, the campus culture and things like that. And the guy that they brought in, the speaker, the more that we learned about his speech, about him, George and I have spent literally like the last hour plus here going through this speech. We watched the entire commencement speech together. We looked up this guy's profile on LinkedIn, which he encouraged.
And we highly recommend that. We highly encourage everybody else to do.
Yeah, yeah. And we the thing is, it's not like we're doing this because we're creeps. I mean, he told people in the commencement speech to do this, to look up his LinkedIn account and his Instagram account. And anyway, you know, I'm usually not one to look up commencement speeches that, you know, for graduations that I'm not personally taking part in. But we watched the whole thing. We learned more about this guy. We saw some of the discussion on social media and whatnot. And man, if there is something that is more emblematic of the tone-deaf approach to difficult conversations and situations that major colleges and universities often have, I don't know that the speech by Chris Pan could possibly be top. I don't know that you could find one better or I guess worse, really, than what he delivered today.
I'm not going to pretend to have seen a lot of commencement addresses, but I'm pretty sure I actually gave one once when I was at for my high school graduation.
I've given so several as a teacher.
Mine might be the worst, honestly.
No, it's not worse than this. This is the epitome. This is the epitome of every just misguided, milquetoast, like grifting kind of impulse that you could possibly imagine. It is so, as a commencement speech in general, it is awful. In a vacuum,
it's a great rendition of Four Non Blondes.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get to all of that, I promise. As in a vacuum, it's terrible. In context, with obviously a tragedy happening. Yeah. Yes. In context, it's so much worse. And again, like, at a school like Ohio State, my commencement speakers, I graduated twice from Ohio State. I have my bachelor's and master's. My bachelor's degree I got in 2007. George,
this guy.
Not George Bush, William Jefferson Clinton, okay, a former president of the United States, was my commencement speaker. And then when I got my master's degree, it was, I think, Brian Williams, who at the time was not yet disgraced, I guess.
But and even those two habitual liars better than the charlatan that on stage today.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Christopher Pan before I get into his actual speech. Christopher Pan is an Ohio State alum. He was a homecoming king in the late 90s. Facebook, worked at Facebook for a time, Harvard MBA, PepsiCo, apparently. And then as far as I can tell, he's been selling bracelets through an organization, which I really don't want to name because I don't want to give him any more attention than he deserves. But I do want to tell you, they absolutely have a TEDx talk associated with this. But it's essentially a bracelet selling, a jewelry selling enterprise.
And the bracelets are just like washers with like
string,
very thin lanyard tied to them.
You might have seen them before.
Probably don't even cost a dollar probably to produce any of them, let alone maybe 50 cents.
But you can buy them for almost $30 on the website. Regardless, I don't know that this is necessarily a dude who should be giving a commencement speech at any college or university, but much less Ohio State University. So anyway, it comes on, and let's just talk about the speech itself, and then we can talk about all the other crap that we kind of found out after we watched it. Does that sound good, George? We can go through our notes and whatever. So I'm going to take you through it. I want you to envision, if you will, that you're in Ohio Stadium. The sun's beating down on you. You're wearing a black robe. If you're like me and my undergrad, you're wearing a suit for some stupid reason. And just
By the way, I didn't go to my own commencement. I had to mail my diploma. I told my parents, don't come. And it was for that exact reason. I said, you're just going to be baking in the sun. And there's, I don't even remember who gave the commencement for me in 2016. So I never blame anybody for wanting to skip the ceremony just at a school of Ohio State size that takes place in the beginning of May, baking in the sun in a football stadium like that. And I think today just kind of reinforced that stance.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's not a fun experience. I mean, I'm glad I went to get my master's. But so when I got my bachelor's, I wore a suit because I'm an idiot. But when I got my master's, I wore swim trunks, flip flops, and like a regular undershirt, like a t-shirt. And then what I did is I strapped frozen water bottles to myself, and then just drank them during the ceremony. Just poured it over my head because it was hot. It was like 95 degrees out, and I was like, screw this. So yeah, but that was that made,
you know, who else was drinking during the ceremony?
We'll get to that We'll get to that. Anyway, so he starts off this thing, and it's if you really want to know the general vibes of Christopher Pan's speech here, it's really just kind of like, I don't know, like a meditative seminar, breathing exercise, hippy dippy crap. It's, again, in a vacuum, it's whatever. In context, it's insane. And we'll get to that. So it starts off with like an AI.
This guy probably digs Feldenkrais, if you know what that is.
So it starts with like an AI generated like Canva image. He starts by wanting to get everybody's energy flowing. That's a direct quote.
He had a PowerPoint. That's important to mention. Like probably made himself that was like fourth grade caliber quality.
Yeah, clearly made by himself. There's no, let me put it this way. If he paid someone to make that for him, then whoever paid him money to be the commencement speaker should be in jail. Because
I got 100% on a project at Ohio State where I talked about Fallout 4 for 45 minutes that had a higher quality PowerPoint than this guy brought to commencement.
Yeah. It's real graphic design is my passion energy. He starts, and this is true, by trying to get everyone to sing four non-blondes, What's Going on stage, you know, where it's like, and I say, hey, like that's literally what he wanted people to clap and sing along.
Because when you're about to go off and start your life, the first thing you want to hear is 25 years and my life is still trying to get off that great big hill.
That's
of hope.
That's beautiful. Some beautiful pipes, George.
Destination. Oh, if you like my rendition, you should hear Chris Pan belt it.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
In the shoe.
Yeah. So he starts dancing on stage. He tries to get all of these, like, all these PhDs and leaders of academic departments behind him who have.
And he does.
Which is hilarious because these guys have worked for decades of their life dedicating themselves to an incredibly difficult, you know, hard, intensive research about their chosen academic topic. And this guy who sells bracelets is like saying, all right, yeah, we're going to swing to four non-blondes.
Also, we're two guys. I'm 30. You're in your late 30s.
Yeah, I'm 39.
How many of the students are familiar with four non-blondes?
The meme.
Have we considered that?
The meme associated with this where it's like He-Man singing
it. Was a meme a decade ago.
No, even like I'm convinced that like half of them weren't even out of grade school. Before, like, when that actually came out. So none of them know what the hell he's singing.
I don't even know who He-Man is.
Yes. And so, anyway, so he does this, and then he, like, starts going into this stupid, like, you know, business seminar crap where it's like three blind men touch an elephant, and they all touch a different part, and there it's like, what are you talking about? So, again, as stupid as that is, and as bad as that is, you're like, it's fine.
Also, the way the guy pivots and transitions between these topics
right.
is just seamless in this speech.
Yeah, yeah.
He touches on so much in like 15 minutes. It's impeccable.
That's the thing that's wild about this. I'm recapping this, and you're probably like, what are you talking about? Like, this sounds like a fever dream. And I'm like, believe me, dude, watch the video. It's the same thing. There are no transition from one thought to the other. Literally at like
Seamless.
3 to 4 minutes in, he's talking about blind men touching an elephant. And then 10 seconds later, he's saying, quote, I see Bitcoin as a very misunderstood asset class, which, by the way, elicited the loudest boos I think I've ever seen at Ohio Stadium. Like, and again, I'm watching like a recording of this and it's just coming through like, what are you talking about? But he's like, no, it's decentralized and finite. Its issues have been resolved. And so he just goes on about how Bitcoin rules and is awesome, which, by the way, in the aftermath of this, we went on Bitcoin, the subreddit, which is like, you know, ground zero for Bitcoin grifters, and they're all hyping each other up and whatever. And somebody posted this speech on the Bitcoin subreddit. And some of the commenters were like, how did it go? And the guy who posted was like, not well. It's not poorly. I don't know that this advanced the cause of Bitcoin at all.
But the best Bitcoin part of the speech had to be when he was talking about like currency inflation. Ted Carter to participate in his demonstration with quarters about how four quarters like a few years ago now has like the purchasing power of three.
Yeah.
And then like, in terms of emphasizing the growth potential of Bitcoin, Ted Carter just holds up this like physical token that's supposed to represent a Bitcoin to the student body and just goes, Bitcoin!
Yeah. And the thing is, they do this magic trick, right? Like, it's a whole, you're supposed to put the coins in a little satchel and then, like, oh, there they're gone. But nobody can see it because they're doing it behind the podium. And the camera can't pick up any of it anyway because it's so far away, and it's just like and everybody in the audience is like, what the hell are you doing? So
the utter confusion on the faces of the students is the most consistent part of this speech.
It's fantastic. There's a
cheers.
Yeah,
it people are just perplexed.
My favorite part, my favorite audience reaction,
dancing during four non-blondes.
That's my favorite. Yeah, exactly. There's four non-blondes. He's singing four non-blondes. There's one mom who's dancing, and everyone's looking at her like she's insane. And then there's this
one of her family members is like, settle down.
Yeah, exactly. And there's this guy who's sitting by her. He's like, he's got this beard, and he's wearing like kind of a plaid shirt or whatever. Like, he was so angry, and I would be too if I had to go through this. So anyway, there's this insane magic trick. He then talks about manifesting things into reality, which manifesting is its whole insane new agey can of worms. He talks about the singing revolution. There's a weird diss on like antidepressants where he's like, no, I didn't take those. I just decided to sing my way to happiness. And he talks about the singing revolution of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania.
Which in wake of what we opened the show discussing is an incredible thing to mention.
It's unbelievably tone deaf. I mean, we're talking about like massive activism and demonstrations at the end of communism, right? Like the fall of Berlin Wall, that stuff, you know, with the collapse.
I'm talking about spurring antidepressants for singing.
Yeah, but same thing. That's what I'm talking about. The whole thing is tone deaf. Like that, the fact that it's basically ignoring, you know, major world events in favor of saying, well, if we all just sang ourselves to happiness, it would be great. He does more.
It's particularly amazing coming from him because he starts the speech off by speaking on how he grew up in Taiwan.
Right.
And then pivots to saying, oh, like the way that all these Eastern Bloc countries freed themselves from the grip of communism was by singing collectively.
Yeah, that's right.
About, you know,
the most reductive possible way to talk about like organized resistance to tyranny. Anyway, so in the midst of this, he's absolutely just chugging this mug of tea. We'll get to why that's significant later. Just keep
it's
that
a tie dye. It's a tie dye mug.
It's a tie dye mug. Well, it's got like a rainbow theme motif. I don't know. But anyway, my point is that this will become important in a second. Don't forget that he's chugging this tea throughout.
Key detail.
Okay. Key detail.
Like swigs. Like
yeah. Oh no, he finished the whole thing up. So. He also mentions he's given everybody in the audience one of his bracelets that he's been selling for at least 7 years, at least according to his YouTube channel. Booze, loud booze. Nobody wants one. he then unleashes the super galaxy brain quote of hurt people, but heal people, which is there's a draft of his. That's right. There's a draft of his speech that he made available.
Eight drafts of this speech.
Yeah. He meant to say like heal people, but instead he just said heal people. He then went on to talk about fake news, essentially, about how people were misrepresenting his words in the media, which is specifically referring to the Lantern reporting on what he said he was going to say. So like basically someone taking his own words and then saying this is what he said. He then goes on to talk about like healing the world and whatever crap and says, quote, are you causing more divisiveness or are you part of the healing? And then can we all be the flower in the gun? Which is one of the most.
See, if they had let him talk about Israel and Palestine, then this all would have flowed so much.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It would have more sense.
Another thing we'll get to that. He says harmony is recognizing there's multiple paths up the mountain. Gives out his Instagram and LinkedIn, and then he ends the speech with this little light of mine, which again, unhinged. So,
booze. And nobody sings along.
Nobody sings along. But there's a few people in the audience who are now my most hated people on the planet.
Nobody on the Jumbotron that they panned to was mouthing any lyrics.
Oh, no. But anyway, awful speech. I don't know why this guy was selected as speaker. I have an inkling of why this guy was selected as speaker, but pretty bad. But again, like I said, all in a vacuum, this is an embarrassing moment. Ohio State moves past the blah, blah, blah. But combined with campus unrest, obvious tragedies that are happening, it is compounding a lot of failures of administration that Ohio State has. And I think, you know, again, I'm not going to say that this is like the one thing that like tips everything over the edge and makes Ohio State's administration crap, but it is definitely one of those things that should never, ever happen. And I don't know, it's just bonkers. So let's talk a little bit about what we found out as we did some
our
research.
Internet detective work.
Yeah. We, this is only about an hour. We were like messing around. We were seeing what they were saying on, you know, Reddit and other places like that. I already told you about how, the Bitcoin subreddit was super excited about it. Chris Pan actually posted multiple versions of his commencement speech on Google Docs for anybody to see. And the really bonkers part about this is that all the stuff that we just told you that was in the commencement speech, like that was all there. It's not like this was ad-libbed, right? It's not something he was just pulling out of his butt. He genuinely thought that was something that he should say to people. What's crazy is that in earlier drafts of this speech, he did talk much more about Israel and Palestine and more current events and things like that. And boy, howdy, I'm going to tell you something. I don't think that this would have done anything to heal the world or lessen the, you know, the tensions on campuses or, you know, anything like that. But what I do know is that it might have got him personally in a lot of trouble, because it is the most like insane. Like, I don't know if he believes this stuff where he's talking about how he's trying to build.
No, bridges. The fake news media was censoring his message of peace.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, but he's, you know, literally he says, can we learn to share? Can we learn to care? He talks about, you know, like staying outside of our social media echo chambers, blah, blah, blah. Okay, people say that all the time. It's not anything new. But really, to take a incredibly complicated and difficult, you know,
no, the best line was, I long for a world where a friendly salam is met with a kind shalom.
It is so...
That is poetry.
It's so infuriating.
Man, spitting.
I got to tell you something. And look, I know this is an Ohio State podcast about Ohio State sports, ostensibly. But to take something as fraught and as difficult and as painful as this conflict is, right? The conflict in Gaza and Palestine and Israel, to take something as complicated and as painful as that and to
weave it into a Bitcoin make promo.
It into a Bitcoin promo and something as trite and as ridiculous as singing This Little Light of Mine and freaking four non-blondes is one of the most infuriating things that I can possibly imagine.
And it can only come
from the mind of somebody who came from Harvard MBA, went to Facebook, and then founded like a jewelry company. Like, that is so infuriating to me.
Oh, we know what kind of mind it came from.
It makes me so angry because this is a real situation that is impacting people in a very real way, where people are dying and starving to death, and that somebody would come on the commencement thing and say, you know what, it's a really good idea if I come out and say that, hey, if we keep doing the same things, we'll get the same brokenness, screaming louder, it'll make us deaf. We need to genuinely listen from the heart and stand together. What are you talking about?
Well, like, I mean, look, we haven't dropped the biggest bomb on this from our detective work yet, which, you know, to be fair, I mean, it's not like this was super new information, sure, because we got to give credit to a couple ladies at the Lantern, Nicole.
Josie Stewart, managing editor at the Lantern, and then Nicole Nowicki.
Nicole Nowicki.
Yeah, assistant editor.
They wrote about this. Like, so when Chris Pan is talking about the fake news in the speech in terms of discrediting what he's trying to say, I mean, first of all, going out of the way to call the student newspaper fake news.
Yeah, that's right. The Lantern.
Yeah, you know, nobody in the student body actually likes the Lantern. It's not insane to like openly lambast the arm of student journalism at the university you're giving the commencement speech at.
Right.
But then, you know, they actually called attention to this all the way back on like Monday, like almost a week before the speech happened. And that was the writing process, as Josie so eloquently called it in the footnote of the article she wrote,
yeah,
that Chris Pan had going into this, in which he literally like openly bragged about on both Instagram and LinkedIn, which he plugged at the end of his speech too.
Yeah, that's
he said.
Yeah, I want to emphasize real quick before you say this. I want to say this real quick. He told people to look this up. Okay, it's on his LinkedIn. It's on his Instagram. We are not slandering this guy.
I don't know if he specifically referenced these posts, but he promoted himself.
No, but it's there for anybody to see. It's there for anybody to see. So I just want to point out, this is not us inferring things. This is not us making stuff up. You can go look on it yourself. You can go to Chris Pan's. It posted a week ago on his LinkedIn account. You can look at this yourself. I want to just point that out.
He's even more forthright on Instagram, and I'm just going to read the Instagram caption, which says, "Giving credit where credit is due, I've gained so much healing, inspiration, and creativity working with different ayahuasca shamans, mostly," and then he tags a couple of them and says, "For my upcoming commencement speech, I tried AI, was okay. Then I decided to try HI, higher intelligence. Buckle up, gonna blow everyone's heart wide open next Sunday." And then throughout the speech, he's on stage drinking that aforementioned tie-dye mug.
Right.
And look, listen.
We have no idea what's in
what
that
was
mug.
Really right.
What?
But he did start the speech out wearing sunglasses before taking them off coming up, and he was chugging that mug pretty frivolously. And for the amount of content that was in this speech, given what he was alluding to on social media, I mean, you can pretty clearly connect the dots on what kind of mess this was turning out to be.
Yeah, yeah. I can't. We obviously can't say for certain that he was drinking a psychoreactive psychedelic tea and brewed through ayahuasca or whatever. But you know,
and I'm sure there was no shortage of students that were under the influence at commencement themselves.
And we definitely can't say that's you know what he was doing. On the other hand,
but they're not talking to anybody. They're just there to get a piece of paper. Right.
But I will also say it's not a good look when the guy who is doing your commencement speech openly posts about this on social media and multiple platforms and then shows up to your commencement speech wearing sunglasses and chugging a huge mug of something. Like that is it's a bad look. Now
he's openly bragging about this a week in advance,
right?
And it just falls on deaf ears,
right?
So, I feel so bad for the people at the Lantern that tried to call attention to this a week in advance,
yeah.
And just nobody batted an eye. They're like, "Yeah, you know what? We'll see what happens.
It's fine."
And then we get this spectacle,
yeah.
The worst commencement speech at a major public university probably ever.
Yeah, I can't. I would love to see some other examples of anything this unhinged or inappropriate or ridiculous. You know, again, I have no idea what was going on in his brain or in his mug during it. I do know that all things considered, Chris Van should not have been the commencement speaker.
They got Tim Cook during COVID to do the commencement address.
God, like
they had nobody else.
Yeah.
They got George Bush in 2002 while he was president of the country.
Right. Right.
There was nobody else they could have gotten, regardless of affiliation to Ohio State. They had to get this guy.
Yeah, I mean, again, you can watch the speech yourself. There, you can just go on YouTube and search for it. It's there. You can look up if you go on like the Ohio State subreddit. You can check out they've got various versions of the speech that he gave. You know, various I guess work in progress, like drafts that he was doing. Which
the latest picture on his Instagram is just him in a shirt with his hands up to his head like this, saying in a t-shirt that says "I'm a crazy one." What happened here?
Yeah, that's the question that we need to be asking. I can't look, honest to God, George, I cannot go on the Instagram and look at that picture right now, because if I look at it just from you describing it, we're going to have to stop the podcast, because I can't deal with that right now. I don't know, man. Look, all things said, this is insane. I don't understand how something like this can happen. Especially at a university like Ohio State. I really enjoyed, despite sweating and just, being baked in the sun for 3 hours, I genuinely enjoyed my commencements and when I graduated, and I got to, I got to shake, Gordon Gee's hand and get my, my diploma and all that stuff. Like, I love that. That was great. This, I think, probably left, to say nothing of everything else happening, in and around campus, but like, this is probably one of the worst possible things that they could have done. In terms of like preparation or like commencement speech, I can't imagine how it possibly could have been a worse experience for people there. It's pretty awful. So that's that. That's what happened today. I was all set here. I wanted to come in. I was like, dang, let's really get here and talk about Sean Stewart, because I really, really want to talk about Duke transfers. It's my favorite thing to do. Guys who averaged what, like 2.6 points a game. That's right up my alley. But instead, we just spent half an hour plus talking about this guy who I'd never heard of before and will never think of again, probably ever, after this whole debacle. Wild stuff out of your flagship university of the state of Ohio. So good job, everybody. Well done. Definitely did it. We'll. Man, I got to tell you something. We might even have that screenshot of him just chugging that mug as our as the Dubcast header image this week, because it was something else. Yeah. And you know what? And we pulled up a list of all the commencement speakers. Like, that's the thing, man. Like, Barack Obama, you know, George W. Bush, like Tim Cook, like these are people, you know, William Jefferson Clinton, like people who have done stuff. George H.W. Bush, who
Joe Biden would have literally been a better commencement speaker. Yeah,
Sherrod Brown,
this guy.
Yeah, Sherrod Brown. Like these are people who, like, you know, Archie Griffin.
We're talking about presidents in office that have given commencement addresses at Ohio State.
Johnny Ginter's mortal enemy, Greg Lashook. you know, like, I'm just,
God, DJ Burns.
Yeah, that's right. John Glenn was a commencement speaker. William McKinley was a commencement speaker in 1895. Just unbelievable. And then, like, you know, God, just that this guy is joining that list is just absolutely bonkers. And R.L. Stein, how could you, I mean, come on, man. Like, It's
he's actually an Ohio State alumni, I think.
Yeah, Arl. I mean, shoot, he's from Bexley. He rules. Yeah, man. I don't know. It's just really wild, and I don't know. It's just something.
It's just crazy that by the standard of them having long established that, like, okay, we don't actually have to get someone that's affiliated with the university to do this because we're big enough that, you know, we could just get somebody important, regardless of affiliation, to come talk.
Right.
It's like, you
have
just
no limits.
Do that?
Yeah, exactly. You have no limits. You can get whoever you want.
Your candidate pool was literally anybody, and you settled on this guy.
Right. Exactly. I'm not going to say they were all bangers. Like, definitely had some guys who were like, okay, but regardless, if you're ranking these dudes, and there's been a lot, they've had a number of.
Are you challenging the eloquence of George W. Bush Jr.?
He would have been better than this.
Well, he literally did it.
Neil Armstrong did it.
Neil Armstrong, Asher? You said?
Hey, hold up, Herb Asher. Sorry, this is only interesting to me. Herb Asher was a political science professor at Ohio State and a super cool bro, and was one of my professors when I was there. And I'll tell a whole Asher story at some other time.
Didn't the university just have someone win like a Nobel Prize for physics or something?
Yeah, that would have been.
Why not that
cool.
guy?
That would have been cool.
That seems like a good candidate.
Yeah. God. Anyway, so that's stupid. We're done talking about it. Let's.
Well, Johnny's going to write about it.
I'm going to write about it. You better believe it.
He's still pretty worked up.
Anyway, let's decompress. There's a song I would like us all to sing. It's No Rain by it's called No Rain by Blind Melon. And we're all going to hold hands. No, it's freaking ridiculous. All right. So that's that. We'll get into actual sports thing in a second. We got to do Ask Us Anything, though, because I want to give the people a little bit of what they want. First of all, we're going to remind you the Dubcast is sponsored by the Dry Goods Store at 11warriors.com. Drygoods.11warriors.com. Shirts, hat stickers, all kinds of great stuff. Check it out. Ask us anything. This is what will calm me down. This is what's going to help me handle what we just talked about.
You know, unless somebody asks about pasta again.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I don't know that I can. I don't know that my brain can fully process that. Okay, let's go ahead and do Ask Us Anything. So first of all, this is from Kevin, who says, okay, so Ohio State, obviously we just have the NFL draft. Only four draftees. That was a pretty, you know, considering how many guys came back, I guess it's not a shock. But hey, you know, four left. So of the draftees, who do you think has the best chance of making the Hall of Fame? I mean, obviously Marvin Harrison Jr., but, you know, okay, let's, like,
come on.
Let's expand it. You know what? I read this wrong. It's not Ohio State draftees. It's NFL draftees. So Kevin is actually speaking of the draft class as a whole. So let's. Oh, okay. So that's a much more. Yeah, I'm sorry, Kevin. I don't want to mischaracterize your question. That is a much better question than what I said. So yeah, in the draft as a whole, who would you say has the best chance of making the Hall of Fame? I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. is still a really good.
I think it's Marv.
Yeah, Marv is still a really good choice for that.
I hear his dad might have made it rather quick.
Yeah, I think he might be okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we talked about this last week. I don't think Caleb Williams is any great shakes. And if he ends up being anything more than a mediocre quarterback, I'm going to be surprised, frankly. I don't think this draft had a lot of juice in it. I don't think it had a ton of star power, honestly. Like, it wasn't one of those things where people are like, wow, we got to see this guy in the NFL besides maybe Marvin Harrison Jr. Neighbors looks good, but like, okay, Ndunze, you know, but like, beyond that, I think, you know, it was a good wide receiver class. It was a really good
Ndunze
wide receiver
class. Can't make it if Caleb Williams is throwing the ball, according to you.
That's true.
Know my thoughts on the matter.
Yeah, I do. And we've talked about that, but it was a really good wide receiver class, but beyond that, I don't know that there was anybody who really popped for me. I got to go with Marv. I think route man.
I still think it's Marv. Yeah,
it's gotta be. Okay. And we only have two this week, which is fine because obviously we've gone insane. This one's from our good friend Alvin, who wants to know, what is our favorite hot sauce? Are you a spicy food lover, George?
So this is interesting because I really don't like hot sauce at all. And it's not because I can't tolerate it. I actually have an extremely high tolerance for hot, spicy food because of the maternal side of my family that hails from St. Clairsville, Ohio. So my entire side of that family has an incredibly high, like, tolerance for that stuff, where even like when you go to, like, you know, restaurants that are like infamous for this kind of stuff with the kind of sauces that you need to like sign a waiver before they actually let you try them, we're just kind of more annoyed with the experience that it creates for the overall flavor of the food than we are like genuinely like in pain or irritated by the heat.
Sure.
So I usually just, I don't even engage with it, to be honest. So I couldn't even really say that I have one that I particularly like. I'm much more fond of like all the other types of flavors, even bitterness, than I would say heat. So I really don't have one, but it's not because, you know, I'm a little baby or anything.
Don't print that I'm a little baby. If you print that I'm a little baby, I will sue you. How dare you imply? No, I like spicy stuff. I'm not saying I'm like some kind of like spicy pro like George Eisner, but I like spicy stuff. When we did the podcast with Tyvis and we went to BW3s, we were doing those, somebody dared us to do their spiciest wings, which, you know, it's the spiciest BW3s wings, right? Like, so it's not like, you know, nobody's running out of the building, you know, calling an ambulance or anything like that. But I was fine with it.
Yeah, like I did that once too. And I was like, I just don't want to eat this again. It's just like not.
But I ate four of them and I was like,
it's not good.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
I don't enjoy the taste of this. It has nothing to do with me being like, oh my God. It's whatever.
Don't tell people I can't have spicy food.
I'm glad we're on video now so everyone can appreciate
that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. but I like spicy food a lot. It is something that I do enjoy. I don't like, you know, just heat for heat's sake, but I do enjoy spicy foods. And I can handle a pretty decent amount of spice, but my favorite is actually just like the regular old Cholula that you get at the grocery store. And I don't, you know, it's just like, you know, jalapeno, habanero, whatever. And so if you haven't had Cholula, it's the one with the wooden top. And I always get the green one, the Chile Verde one. And I just like the taste. It's not even really that spicy. It's not spicy at all, really. But I just think it adds a lot of nice flavor to like chili and tacos and stuff like that. So in terms of like heat, I like to get sometimes, I'll ask this for like my birthday or for Christmas, like a sampler. And sometimes I like those variety packs where they really do try to do like some interesting things with flavors and whatnot. Sometimes they're stupid and they just try to make everything way too hot. But like sometimes you get some really good tasting stuff. So I like to try out new ones from time to time. There was one with like an iguana on the label. I cannot for life of me remember what it was. It came in one of those sampler packs and had an iguana on it. And it was delicious. And I haven't been able to find it since. So if you know what that is, if anybody listening knows what that is, let me know and I can try to get that again because it was like a habanero one and I really liked it. So good questions out of you guys this week. Keep sending them in, keep asking them, particularly in the off season. We need those questions. Let's talk a little bit about Ohio State sports. Let's endeavor to do that.
Is that the purpose of this show?
Yeah, I don't, well, that's debatable. But a couple things. First of all, the transfer portal has came and went, and I really did want to ask you about this, George. No Ohio State quarterbacks left. Everybody's there. The quarterback room is as it was. Is that, I mean, I'm shocked, frankly. Like, I was convinced by how people were talking in and out of the program, you know, all the rumors that were kind of swirling around, just the fact that NIL is going bonkers, that at least one guy would leave, two guys probably, and everybody stayed put. Like, so my question to you is, what do you think happened? Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I'll say that of all the candidates, the only guy I'm surprised that actually didn't leave was Kainholz.
Sure.
And I don't even know if I would have expected him to leave prior to the spring game. But I did kind of think that he was going to be the odd man out of the equation if there was one. And it is a little bit surprising, I think, that he stuck around. But the fact that all five are still in Columbus, I think, I mean, we've spoken at length previously, at least I have, about how we're hoping that the uncertainty of who's going to be the starter that carried over the team in the early parts of last season doesn't repeat itself going into this year.
100%.
And I think that unfortunately it's going to, which is reflected by the fact that it seems like everybody in that room seems to think they have a legitimate shot at competing for the starting job. Because if they didn't, if they thought that they were significantly buried in the depth chart, then they presumably would have gone and sought out an easier opportunity elsewhere. Including Lincoln Kainholz, is genuinely surprising.
So here's the thing about that. That can't be the case. Like I cannot believe that somebody, there are five guys there, right? And what I can't wrap my brain around is that after an entire spring of practices, taking reps and whatever, let's say the guy who's number four or number five, like you're not stupid. Like, you know who's practicing with the ones and the twos most often. You have a general idea about where you are in the pecking order. So here's what I think. Somebody who's in that situation.
Oh, because no quarterback's ever been irrationally confident in their.
Well, right. And that's the thing. So what I'm thinking is this, and if you follow my line of logic, I think it makes sense for the people who stayed, for the guys who stayed, which again, I have no problem. I think that's totally fine. I mean, that's honestly, that's probably not a terrible decision in their, situation right now. But if you're a guy at Ohio State right now, let's say you're an Aaron Noland, right? And not guaranteed anything at this point, especially because you've got a guy in your class who is higher rated and people seem a little higher on, just in terms of like arm talent, blah, 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 whatever. Coming from Alabama, whatever. I don't know how much it hurts you, especially if you're already getting paid in NIL money, to just wait, to be patient, right? And maybe that's what these guys are. Maybe they're just really patient dudes and they're like, look, whatever shakes out, it's not going to shake out until August at the earliest, right? So what's the harm in seeing what happens? And then, you know, our stock, as it were, right? Like in terms of our transfer potential and whatever, it's going to be the same as it is now, as it will be in December, whenever the next transfer portal opens up.
And if I can interject real quick, whether they recognize it themselves or the university has made this point to them, I think you can look at like the decision that Quinn Ewers made and say that, like, you know,
yeah,
if you're just a little bit more patient, then
you'll get what you want.
Some people have in this era.
That's right.
This job could be yours sooner than you think.
That's right. Wait for the transfer to portal to open up again, see what's available. And then maybe you're like, hey, you can put that on your resume and say, look, I've been at Ohio State for a year. I've been getting tutelage by this great quarterback guru, you know, CJ Stroud, put him in the league. So I don't think it hurts them. And I understand why they'd want to stay. And maybe, you know, like you said, if the quarterback competition is fairly wide open, it may not be wide open for the number five guy, but for the, you know, guys one through three, Probably. Yeah, they probably all have a decent shot at this point. So I don't know. I mean, you're right. Like, they may be confident to the point where they're like, it does not hurt me to stay at Ohio State.
So you started out disagreeing with me, and then you've come around in your own speaking on the issue and said, maybe you're right. I love to hear that.
I don't, my general point is that I don't think that these guys are making a bad decision. I think it's unexpected. It's weird, but I think it makes sense. And,
You don't think that they all think they have a legitimate shot
at
winning the job at this point?
I think at least
that was the point.
I think the number five guy knows he's the number five guy. I don't know if that's Keenholz or whoever, but I think the number five guy.
I think it probably has to be Keenholz at this point.
Well, then, and I think he knows that he's the number five guy, and I don't think he has any illusions that he's going to like leapfrog. I mean, even Julian's saying, you know what I mean? Like, he's got to know that, unless he's like,
yeah. But so just think about it from this perspective, though. So Devin Brown has already gone on record saying, I ain't no wuss like McCord was.
That's right. I ain't leaving.
Like, I'm in it, and all the critics can like eat me because I'm going to prove that I'm here to compete.
Right.
So he's,
which good for him.
You know, for him to transfer out, in spite of what Iowa football insiders that are desperate to move on from Cade McNamara may want you to believe,
jeez,
Devin Brown, you know, is in it for the long haul. And, you know, based on the fact that he was competing for the starting job with McCord last year, probably has a reasonable amount of confidence.
And was named the starter of a bowl game. I mean, yeah.
Will Howard is, you know, fifth year senior coming in here to a new, who made the decision to leave another program that won a conference championship under his tenure there.
Mm-hmm.
And he made the decision to leave and try to get a starting job at a more prominent program. So he's obviously confident even before that he got here that on the way in, I can go in and I can win this starting job. So that's two of the five right there. Julian Sain was at the most like prominent program over the last decade and looked at the situation before leaving Alabama and said, I can go in there and compete for that job, and then it'll presumably be a more stable situation than what's happening in the immediate aftermath of Saban's somewhat surprised retirement, and now the walls are starting to tumble down in Tuscaloosa. And granted, they've, you know, done some righting of the ship, I think, but it's still kind of unwritten in terms of how the new tenure is going to go there. So he said, I can go to a situation in Columbus where there's already more pieces in place, short of a quarterback, because the starter they just had from the previous season just up and left.
Mm-hmm.
I can go capitalize on the tumultuousness of that situation and potentially compete for that job early. So that's three of the five. And then I would argue that at Aaron Noland, who, you know, had very long-term aspirations of coming to this program, committed and then remained resolute up to, I mean, he committed when he was a four-star prospect and then added another star to his rating, and even as his prospect rise, didn't really entertain any other offers or any other incoming noise, was very hard set on Ohio State, and then arguably had the strongest showing in the spring game of any of the quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So even if he wasn't running with the ones.
Right.
So I would think that based on that momentum he has, that he's entrenched, that even if it doesn't happen this upcoming season, he's in a position where, for the sake of him getting better, he's going to be consistently trying to compete for that starting job for as long as he's here. And he clearly wants to be here. Otherwise, he would have seen how crowded this room is and presumably left and been able to get a starting job at a much less competitive program.
Well,
so regardless of what you think about Keinholz, right, in this situation, I think you can easily point to those four different perspectives and conclude that all of those guys think they have a reasonable shot of earning the starting job right now, which is why none of them really wanted to leave and didn't really feel threatened by any of the other people that were in the room with them.
Well, and to your point, I mean, you can even take that further and say maybe that was part of the whole thing with them coming to Ohio State in the first place, where, you know, the presumption was is that you would have a set starter this season anyway, right? Like, if you're recruiting Aaron Nolan, I don't think he was recruited and saying like, hey, you got a shot at being a starter your first year on campus. I don't think anybody, I don't think Ryan Day was telling him that. I think Ryan Day was saying,
I've been saying that.
Yeah, well, yes, you've been saying that, but I'm saying when he was being recruited during that process, he was like, all right, well, we got this guy now, but you'll be here for a year, your sophomore year, you got a good shot at being the starter. So they probably came to campus already presuming that they were going to be sticking around for a year anyway, right, before they were going to be starting. So maybe for them, right, this is like, all right, well, six of one, half dozen of the other, let's just stick around. And again, I'm not upset about any of this. I think having that much talent is pretty awesome, and it gives you the best chance to find the guy who's going to give you the best result. But it is interesting, and I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's too much that's comparable to it right now in college football. So, you know, it also speaks to the maturity of those guys and how well they get along that they're able to, you know, to do that. And I don't know. I'm excited about it. I hope, you know, we keep saying this, but I hope that there's a definitive answer on who that starter is going to be early, and then we can sort all this stuff out as it goes. And if they transfer, you know, later on, then that's totally fine. Like, there's no hard feelings or anything like that. But I do think it makes a lot of sense in some ways. You know, people are surprised that they, you know, they stayed, but I think it makes sense. I think there's, like you just said, and, you know, like the future opportunities that they might get might come out. I think it makes a lot of sense for them to do that. So interesting stuff out of that. There were some transfers. Linebacker Nigel Glover transferred. He was with Ohio State for a season. Was originally, he was, I think he started at Northwestern, I believe. Didn't really make much of an impact here at Ohio State. And Keon Gray's wide receiver transferred as well. And again, you know, he's great talent, but also if you look at that wide receiver room, you know, pretty stacked. The interesting thing is Ohio State really didn't bring in anybody during the spring transfer portal. So some of those depth issues, if you're looking at like offensive line or defensive line, those are still there, and they're going to have to deal with that now, as the season kind of goes through, and they'll have to figure out how to fill in some holes, because, that's not a place. They're loaded in a lot of positions, but not necessarily on the lines. And that's going to be interesting to see how that kind of plays out as we get closer, and what depth looks like. So still stuff going on in terms of football. I don't want to completely ignore it. A few other things we want to mention before we get out of here. We talked about earlier the transfer, Sean Stewart from Duke, came to Ohio State, averaged about 2.5 points a game, didn't play a whole lot, but pretty good talent. People are still pretty high on the guy. We were going to talk about Deion Sanders starting fights with transfers and just being generally a, you know, POS to people online. Not sure where that's going to lead with Colorado's program. We can probably talk
about just go read my article about it.
Yeah. It's pretty bonkers. You should read it. Just recapping the whole saga. I mean, they fell off a cliff after beating a bunch of crappy teams at the beginning of the season last year. I expect that fall to continue. I don't think they're going to do super hot in 2024.
Open the season at home against North Dakota State, so the egg on face potential in light of
that's super high
into this offseason extremely big.
Yeah, extremely.
So high. If they don't come out and win that game and snap their 6-game losing streak extending back to last season, the uproar from the college football community in wake of what happened this week with Deion and Shador Sanders and a couple members of the Austin Peay. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Yeah,
it's one of those college names you've only seen written, never said.
That's how you say it.
The defensive back room at Austin Peay. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
They were under a microscope, and now they've turned it into a target.
Yeah, exactly.
Not great.
Exactly. Also, Mike Conley named NBA's teammate of the year, further proving that Mike Conley is the coolest dude in the NBA. Everybody loves that guy. And I think it's awesome that he is just so well respected and loved, you know, throughout the NBA. And God, he's had an unbelievable career. I cannot believe that guy. First of all, it's amazing that he's still in the league, but like, he played when I was in college. Like, I'm a 39-year-old man. That's bonkers.
I'm glad for him, and Anthony Edwards is a lot of fun, but as a fierce Jimmy Butler loyalist, I can't root for any team with Carl Anthony Towns on it. Fair enough.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. Man, though, the Timberwolves, it's a fun team. So that's pretty much it for the Dubcast this week. Obviously, we spent a lot of time on commencement and how bonkers that story was, and we'll keep talking about it. But again, I don't want to detract or take away from the seriousness of what did happen at commencement. And again, our thoughts and prayers are with the family of everyone affected. We hope that's a situation that gets resolved and honestly, looked into. If there are safety issues, other concerns that weren't addressed that need to be addressed, that has to happen, right? That's where leadership starts. So I hope those things are addressed and taken care of. I hope everybody.
And in spite of everything that happened today, congratulations to all the new Ohio State graduates that deserved a better day of celebration than what they received.
100%. 100%. Efforts. So take care. Good luck to all the graduates. If Ohio State needs a commencement speaker, I've done it. I was selected as the staff commencement speaker more than a few times at my when I was teaching high school. So I'm just saying. Johnny Ginner's here if you need it. I'm an alumni too. And so is George. I mean, frankly, anyone.
I'm no slouch either.
That's right.
I was voted by my peers to do it.
There you go. Okay. So that's the
more to be said about Chris Pan.
I don't know that anybody is voting for him.
I didn't have to leverage any crypto connections to get that gig.
That's right. So that's the Dubcast for this week. We'll see you again next week. And I don't know. Who knows? Maybe the story will continue and we'll keep talking about it. So until then, I'm Johnny.
I'm George.
And we'll see you next time.
Take care, folks.